Dámy a pánové, ať už se vám to líbí nebo ne, přichází Henning!
Prostřu sebe jako stůl, tak to nesli ker v gejzíru. Zvládnu každou velkou porci, sugar daddy, silný růj. Jsi štědrej sponzor a taky můj sladký medvídek. Ty sexy džíny, chci být týp, tak zpřehlíde.
Sugar daddy, sugar daddy.
Pojďme jako diskoborci, co mají všechno na míru. Zvládnu každou velkou porci, sugar daddy, servíruj.
Hello, we are back with Hedvig. Inch by Angry Inch, the podcast where we analysed and tore down the walls surrounding the movie masterpiece that is Hedwig and the Angry Inch, chapter by chapter. And now we're back on the road once again for even more deleted discussions. For this particular scene and, you know, general chat, I am joined by a very, very special guest.
Hello, thank you for having me. My drag name is Anya Dick.
Possibly the greatest name I've ever heard.
Thank you. You know, it wasn't even a thought process when I decided to do drag. It just popped into my mind and I never questioned it. So here we are.
And that was the right way to go. Follow your first instinct. How can anyone on the planet top that? Come on.
Follow your heart. And in my heart, I'm Anya Dick, I guess.
So. I suppose you could say follow your... Yeah.
Yeah. Follow what you need to follow. I like to say I'm an internationally known drag artist. I'm a singer, I'm a musician and a comedian. I live near Washington, D.C. out in farm country where it's quiet and there's plenty of parking day and night. I like to say internationally known because I went on vacation earlier this year and I brought a bunch of Anya Dick stickers with me. And every time, it was in the Caribbean, and every time I went out to a club, I put them at the bottom of the urinals. So people know me there. Intimately.
Oh, that is a genius marketing idea.
Yeah, no, I've had people post pictures of them online and I've been tagged and it's been great.
I'm devastated I didn't think about this. Oh,
well, you're welcome.
What way to advertise, because people are there. Oh, yeah. You know, you've got to look somewhere.
Well, you usually look down to make sure you're at least getting it there in the first place, and give them something to aim at.
And what's a more prestigious place?
Right, yeah.
That's genius. That is amazing. But, I mean, we will get down to the scene we're going to talk about. But first of all, I just have a few questions I go through with people on these deleted ones.
All right.
Now, obviously, I first saw you on Instagram because I just troll the Hedwig hashtag, let's be honest. I'm one of those people. I'm like, oh, I need to go and see who's posting. And I saw, it was quite a while ago now, you were doing a Hedwig look for like a cabaret show or something.
Yeah, I've done Hedwig look a few times. I have a costume that I had made early on when I first started learning to sing and learning to do drag after seeing Hedwig on Broadway. I decided that I wanted to do something like this. So I actually worked with a great company that's in the UK. They're in London. And they made my costume. They helped me make my costume. And I've been using it off and on ever since. But I love getting booked for any sort of Hedwig-esque, you know, anything related to Hedwig. I love turning up and giving a look and singing a song, and I love it.
That was going to be my question, basically. Is it just anything about Hedwig will draw you to it, basically? Like, if someone has a night on, like, oh, I've got to get involved.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, if I see anything Hedwig-related, I want to be a part of it. And I haven't yet traveled anywhere to be, except that's not true. I did go to San Francisco to see Lena Hall's rendition of Hedwig. When she was playing Hedwig right before the end of her run. And so that's the one time I've traveled. But anytime there's Hedwig involved and I'm on the ticket, it's just my favorite thing ever.
I'm so jealous of you for seeing Lena Hall there.
That's really fantastic, yeah.
See, being in the UK, there's not been a lot of options to see it. And I think the only time in my lifetime, other than recently, it was on, I missed it for multiple reasons. So I was so excited this year, as of recording, not to date us too much, when Davina DeCampo
did it
in Manchester. I went to Manchester. I think it was in Leeds as well. But, that was so good to finally have a proper, real production.
So had you not seen it on stage before that?
No, I mean, obviously, right?
Yeah.
I don't mind saying this. The listeners know. I've seen all the bootlegs.
Oh, fabulous. Okay. Something about being there, though.
Yeah, it's not the same. It's not the same. That's why I actually don't think bootlegs are a bad thing. Some people are against them, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. But I don't think they're bad, because to me, when I see them, it just makes me want to go to the show more.
Yeah, you can only get so much entertainment out of a poorly recorded video with crappy sound on a little screen. You know, when you sit there and that emotion flows through you and you feel the fire, it's a different world. It's a different thing.
That's the thing. Yeah. It's not the same experience. It's more like a whetting your appetite for the real thing, isn't it? It's like, oh God, I need to go so much.
It's like watching a Food Network video, but getting really hungry.
That's the perfect way of saying yes, yes.
Ooh, that looks delicious. I want some.
Since becoming a vegetarian, it's been a real problem for me watching cooking shows.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah. I would, you know, I'm not a vegetarian, but I can imagine like the amount of available content and quality content probably just isn't quite as high as everything else.
Exactly. It's a bit of a pain, but whatever. It was my choice, you know, at the end of the day. I made that decision.
Yeah, good for you.
But do you, because obviously at those nights you were singing, so I was thinking, do you have, this is a very difficult question, a favorite song from Hedwig, either just to listen to or to perform? Or one of each?
You know, it really depends on who I think is going to be in the audience. I usually do Sugar Daddy because that one has a lot of get out and get into the audience and mess with people and, you know, give someone a car wash. I call it the wrecking balls, but the car wash. And that one is generally the one I go to, but I have done Angry Inch a couple of times in an unexpected spot, and it's always been a huge hit. At first, the look is exactly like it is in the movie. The people are like, what the hell is going on?
That's what you want, though, as
a reaction,
right?
Yeah, that's the point, right? I've done Angry Inch a few times. I've done Origin of Love a few times. Oh. I don't know. Every one of them is such a beautiful little story and such an amazing spot within the larger world of Hedwig that I like to just sink into it and pretend that I'm telling you this is my life and this is my story, and I love it.
Oh, that's the best way to sort of approach it, isn't it? Like incorporate yourself into the role, become the character, even if you're only doing one song.
Yeah, especially, you know, doing drag gigs is tough when you do like ensemble shows because you spend hours and hours getting ready, getting to the venue, waiting for your turn, and then you do like a 5-minute song and then it's over. So I try to pour everything I can into it so people remember, oh, Anya Dick did that. Oh my God, I got to see her next time.
Oh yeah. You should do like I was going to say a whole Hedwig like tribute night, but I've seen you performing that on your Instagram as well.
Mm-hmm. There's a bar in DC named JR's Bar, and they do a series of drag performances that they call the Love Letter series. And so far they've done Rocky Horror and they've done Hedwig. They've done Little Shop of Horrors, and they're coming up soon. I think they have Cinderella coming out in a couple of weeks, and then I think they're moving on to Sweeney Todd, which is one that I'll probably be auditioning for.
Oh, and, my God, I love Sweeney Todd so much.
Oh, no. Talk about an angry score. Oh, it's so good. And so what they do is they pull in cast members from all over, you know, all different types of drag and cabaret-style performances to do one song each. And everybody comes with their own flavor on it. And I was the most Hedwig looking because I have that costume.
Oh, and it's a perfect costume, let me just say. I'm jealous.
Thank you. Well, Kraken Counter Couture is the name of the company that made it. They're in London, so check them out.
Oh, I'm in London next week, so okay.
Oh, great. Well, I'll hook you two up. And so, yeah, and what was great about that performance is there were people who took an entirely different tack from this is a Hedwig performance to I'm telling you my story through these words. And they presented as themselves and they had their own twist on it. And it was really fabulous.
I think that's a really good idea because obviously if you're going to just do the, you know, the stage show, then you don't want to do that. You've got a set thing you want to present and stick to. Right. But for like a tribute night, I think that's really cool having people approach it from different angles, bring something new to the table.
Sure. It was fascinating to watch, you know, because I've been a head for a very long time at this point. And I'm so immersed in the story and the characters and just the lore of Hedwig that it doesn't occur to me to take a song out of that universe and turn it into something else. I don't know why. Maybe I should. But it was really great. I mean, especially the last few songs, you know, the Hedwig's Lament and Exquisite Corpse. Watching that performer go through that in a different way was just amazing.
Oh, that's always such an emotional bit, no matter how it's done, I think. Yeah. And what did you perform at that particular?
Sugar Daddy.
Was it Sugar Daddy again?
Yeah.
So what is your sort of take on the different versions of some of the songs? Because Sugar Daddy especially, you know, from stage to movie to Broadway, they mix it up every time. In fact, the one I mentioned before with Davina DeCampo, that was another sound yet again. That was going for like a kind of sort of like a sexy funk number.
Ooh, I'll have to see if I can find a bootleg of that.
It was a very different sort of approach to the whole layout of the stage as well. They had like an inflatable gummy bear, but dressed up in fetish gear.
Oh, wow.
It was like bouncing around.
Fogging up the windows of the bag like a pole.
Yeah, it was very interesting. I've never seen anything like it for a stage show of Hedwig.
Well, I first saw Hedwig in the Broadway show. It was like second or third night of Neil Patrick Harris doing it. So it was still very, very new to the Broadway world, even though it had been out 19 or 20 years before that Broadway. And so I saw the rock version, you know, the updated Broadway version, which is much more rock and roll. So then when I saw the movie, I was really surprised to hear sort of more a countrified, you know, little folky sort of version on that soundtrack. It was the same. But unfortunately, the only backing tracks I could find for years were the country version. So I've always done the country version. But if I can find a great backing track with either of the other two, I would love to do that as well.
I think it sometimes depends on the venue as well, because like, in the movie where Hedwig is performing that song, I think it kind of makes more sense that it's a bit more low-key and country for the crowd, so to speak.
Yeah.
I don't think they'd be too into a hard rocking number.
Well, they certainly didn't enjoy it for Angry Inch, you can tell.
Again, in the best way, though.
Right.
But the Neil Patrick Harris one, I love it, but I think that fits. Oh, it's on Broadway. Like, they must have sat down and gone, we have to make this bigger.
Well, it is. I think it's the biggest number in the show, especially when you look at like the Broadway stage and how he was climbing all over the equipment and jumping off of things. I think that's the song that hurt John Cameron Mitchell when he came back to reprise the role.
Oh, is it?
Like jumping off of the car, you know, there was an old dilapidated car. And I was watching that, and that was really the point where I was like, wow, you know, people, you can be taken seriously doing something like this. Like, this is on Broadway, and this is making hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, you know, and this is serious. You can do this thing. And I was watching him fly all over the stage and swing the microphone around, and I don't know. It was so fabulous to me that it changed my life.
Oh, that's good. So did you come to it first through the show then rather than the movie?
Yeah, the first time I saw Hedwig, I had known of Hedwig, but Hedwig originally came out when I was, I'm going to say 21-ish years old, I'll have to do the math, 22 years old, and I was a software developer in suburban Washington, D.C. I didn't have any gay friends, I wasn't in any gay culture, like I was, you know, I was a tech bro, and so I knew of Hedwig, and it wasn't until I got older that I started getting more interested in that kind of storytelling and in drag and, you know, gender expression. And then I saw the stage show. Somebody took me there for my birthday, actually bought me tickets. And it just blew my mind. Like, I had seen Lacage and I had seen other things where gender, or, you know, drag was a part of it. But this one was just so visceral, and it was so big, and it was so loud, and it was, and the breaking the fourth wall in the way that the stage show works, you know, where they talk to the audience. And that to me was just that's what I love to do, is I love to talk to my audience. I love to be involved with my audience. And it just lit this fire inside of me. Like, not only do I love Hedwig now, but I think I want to try this and see what I can learn how to do.
Oh, that's fantastic that it's really sort of led you down that path. I think a lot of people kind of have a similar story who I've spoken to on here. 'Cause it was my introduction to, not only musicals, but sort of gender exploration and all this kind of stuff as well. So I think a lot of people have, it's opened up a new world to a broad audience.
Yeah, and at the time I didn't really think, oh, I want to do drag.
Yeah.
At the time I thought, I want to be loud and I want to jump around and I want to learn how to sing and I want to be on a stage and I want to make people have this emotion that I'm having right now. Like, I want to do that. Drag didn't come around for another couple of years. I'd already been taking voice lessons and working on that part of it. Mm. And there's a big drag pageant in DC every year called Miss Adams Morgan. And it happens right at Halloween. So the whole audience gets dressed up and shows up and has a big party during the pageant. And somebody had described it to me as, oh, Ryan, you would, my boy name is Ryan. Ryan.
Oh, no, don't reveal it.
Oh, no. Oh, don't track me down. You would love this. You know, it's a drag pageant and everybody gets dressed up and goes and it's so much fun. And to me, that meant everybody gets dressed in drag. And so I'm like, okay, yeah, I'll do that if everybody's doing it. And so I started the whole process of figuring out where to get things, and, you know, boobs and pads and all of that stuff. And I was about halfway there and I ordered a box of makeup online, literally box of makeup on Amazon. And I tried to do my own makeup and it was terrible.
Like, it looks easy until you try.
Exactly. I immediately knew that I was not going to figure it out by the big day. So I found myself a makeup artist and texted my friends and said, hey, if anybody needs help with their makeup, I found this person. And I immediately got a text back that said, what are you talking about? We're not going in drag.
Oh, no. What?
I know. So I went in drag and I discovered that in character, if I'm pretending to be someone else and I look like someone else and I just am good at pretending to be someone else, I can say anything I want and people laugh at it. And I felt this power. I felt like this energized charge that night. And I'm like, wow, okay, so I'm already working on my stage presence and my voice and acting. Here's another thing. I see a tool here. I see value here. And so I started working on the drag part of it as well. And that was about 4 years ago.
Hmm.
And it's almost a superpower. You know, you're this magical creature and people want to hear what you have to say. And I love it.
I totally get that. Like, I don't do drag or anything professionally, but I dress in drag for a band.
Oh, yeah.
And as soon as I'm in character, you're another person.
Yeah.
And it gives me like a confidence. It's an armor. It's a superhero, as you said.
It absolutely is. Yeah. It's like wearing Superman's cape. It just works.
And that's how I've always seen Hedwig's wig. Like, as soon as Hedwig puts on Hedwig the rock star character, so to speak, rather than their actual self, it's their armor. It's their protection. It's what makes them strong.
Exactly. And I think that that's why I was so drawn to that at that time, because I'm like, oh, this is like what Hedwig does. This is like this story. I'm hearing somebody else tell me the same story in a way that makes sense to me internally.
Yes.
And it's just, Hedwig has been sort of the driving force. I don't know if I'll ever be able to do the whole show. I'm well into my 40s at this point, and that's a lot of work. But you never know. Maybe I'll do it with the crate like John Cameron Mitchell did.
Why not? I think go ahead. Do it. Yeah. You've got nothing to lose.
That's the truth, except maybe like pulling a groin ligament or something. Who knows?
Hey, don't worry. I'm catching up to you. I feel your pain on that. So you mentioned Sweeney Todd as well. Are you a musical fan in general, or is it like not a genre you've really had much time for over the years? Because sometimes I've found Hedwig can be a bit of an outlier for people. Like, oh, this is the only musical I really like.
You know? I was a musical fan in the way that, like, my growing up in Minnesota, my mom would take me to go see Andrew Lloyd Webber musicals. We saw Joseph in the Technicolor Dreamcoat, and we saw The Phantom of the Opera, and we saw Jesus Christ Superstar. Mm. And I was always really into the singing of it. Like, I wanted to be the person who sang the song and got the people in the audience to feel the way that I did. You know, it was the performance of it that I was into. But musicals in general, I really wasn't. I still am sort of illiterate when it comes to a lot of the really famous Broadway musicals, because I have a hard time suspending disbelief when people break into song. You know, like
that's why a lot of people have said they like Hedwig, even when they don't like musicals, because, like, oh, well, the songs in this are justified.
It's justified, and it's that fourth wall. You're at Hedwig's concert, and of course she's going to be singing you songs, right?
Like, yeah,
it fully fits. But that being said, there are some musicals that I've gotten into, I've watched a lot, and I choose songs that are generally big and campy and I can be funny with. So I've done a lot of like Drowsy Chaperone kind of stuff, you know, like musicals that not everybody might know, but have great music in them. And I've gained an appreciation for the musical genre. Absolutely.
Now, have you, because it's relevant to this scene, have you ever been a fan of Rent?
I know. I knew this question was going
to
come up.
You don't have to say yes. You know, you could say no.
I have not been able to make it all the way through Rent.
Ah.
I don't know the music well. I think because at the time when Rent was setting the world on fire, it was a situation that I just didn't identify with. You know, like the characters in that were not me. I wasn't in that situation. I didn't think I would ever be in that situation. I didn't have a group of friends like that. Like, I just didn't identify. And then eventually, 20 years on, I go back and look at it, and it's a little bit like old fashioned, you know, you look at it and you're like, oh God, I can't believe I ever had that hairstyle. And that's how I feel about Rent, but people are so in love with it, and people really, really got something so profound out of it that I do my best, appreciate what it is.
Yeah, you're making an effort, and that's what counts. You've tried. Rather than just dismissing it, you've given it a go. Now, I am a fan, but I only saw it, as of recording, about 3 years ago. And it was because of Hedwig. And, you know, I knew the story that John had been, you know, cast in Rent and stuff first before he decided, no, you know what, I'm going to do my own thing. Obviously, it comes up in the movie with Yitzhak, you know, auditioning for the part and getting the part of Angel. So I just one day was like, you know what, I'm finally going to watch this. Let's give it a go. I had the movie version. I've seen the stage show since. And I didn't realize it was so depressing. Like, I loved it, but I was so depressed.
Yeah, I think that might have also been another part of it, is just the hopelessness that these characters are in, and the what felt like performative happiness in the, you know, like you're trying so hard to put on this face that everything's going to be okay through this, what's really great sounding music. But there's this like anguish inside, and it just makes me uncomfortable.
I can see why it might do. Yeah. It's a struggle. You feel like you've really been on a journey by the end, let me tell you. And you just like have your head in your hands. You're like, oh my God, what have I just been through?
Well, if I need a downer someday, I might watch it then. I haven't been all the way through it yet, but I'm sure I'll get there at some point.
I'd recommend it, but you have to be in the right mood. Don't just put it on when you're already feeling low or something.
Yeah. And that's hard these days. I mean, media is bombarding us with doom all the time.
Yeah.
It's hard to put yourself in the place where you can take on more these days.
Yeah. And of course, I mean, Hedwig is a good mixture of things. It's got lightness, it's got dark, there's ups, there's downs. Mm-hmm. I mean, your main character, she's kind of horrible sometimes, you know?
She definitely is. And I think that also is one of the reasons that I love the show so much, is because this isn't a perfect person in a bad situation. This person is morally questionable sometimes.
Yeah. You
know? Like, and I think that's just how real people are.
It definitely makes her more relatable, I think. Because I'm sure, okay, what she does to Yitzhak, for instance, oh, it's horrible. It's horrible. But you can see how it could happen, how this person could have been beaten down so much they've become this bitter and you know,
absolutely. And I think that's one of the reasons the stage show, especially for whatever reason, really gives you the moment to realize that. I'm not sure why it translates to me better in the stage show than in the movie, but the understanding how they got there, I think, is empathy is one of those things that I don't know if we really put enough into our popular culture. Especially like building the skill of empathy, which is what Hedwig does at the end. They understand and come to terms with, you know, who and what they are.
Yeah.
And I think the other big thing that I like in the stage show is the ambiguousness of whether he's real or not. You know, Hedwig is this person, but is Tommy real, or is it like a manifestation of Hedwig's imagination?
I am so glad you said that, right? 'Cause one guest I've had on this show brought that up, saying like, oh, I think Tommy isn't real. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, you know, I don't necessarily agree with you, but I love this idea. Let's explore it. Mm-hmm. And then every time I've brought it up to people since, they're like, oh, right, I've never heard of that before. And it's like, but the more I think about it, the more I'm like, maybe Tommy isn't real. 'Cause obviously, Tommy represents to me sort of who Hedwig almost could have been or wanted to be. So I'm going to mold you in this image. But at the same time, that then, as a metaphor, makes them sort of a facet of Hedwig herself.
Mm-hmm. And I think in the movie, the only time that's really, really put forth, and it's even subtle then, there's a scene where Hedwig is holding up the mirror to show Tommy the cross on his forehead, and it does this like split between half of Hedwig's face and half of Tommy's face. Which is that iconic, you know, drawing of the two heads coming apart. I think that's the only time they really allude to that idea in the movie, but maybe I'm wrong.
No, I think they should definitely play with it a little more. That would be the only sort of change I would make. Like, oh yeah, really keep the audience guessing a little bit. Because it would be a fascinating thing to think that, like, either Tommy doesn't exist or Tommy is Hedwig.
Yeah. And I would love, like, I've heard people talking about a Hedwig 2 or, you know, things like that. Mm. And I would love to see the entire exact same story told from Tommy's point of view.
Oh, that's a novel way of approaching it. That's a good idea. Because I don't know if I'd want a sequel.
Right. I think of it like Wicked. You know how Wicked sort of retells the Wizard of Oz story?
Yeah.
I think that would be fascinating, you know.
Right, yeah. John Cameron Mitchell, get on with it. Come on. Get writing.
You're not getting any younger.
I had him on the show and he didn't allude that he was doing this, but God damn it, we're on to you, John.
Sorry, the cat's out of the bag.
And if not... You heard it here first, listeners.
Yeah, I would, you know, I would, when you mention a sequel, I'm working on a musical right now about a country singer who was a very effeminate young boy, and I'm in the process of writing the music right now and trying to build the dialogue around it. And very effeminate young boy who was a great country singer and sang at clubs and got picked up by a producer, like a hookup, you know? And so she fell in love with this producer who was much older and obviously shady. And the producer got them into this huge recording contract and massive tour and superstar. And then at the Grammys, his voice broke. And everybody discovered that he was really a boy, and got Dixie chicked before the Dixie chicks were a thing. And now here we are 25, 30 years later, and just kind of a Hedwig-esque story about here's where I've been and here's what my life has been since then.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah, I really love it. We're about 6 of the 11 songs in. Stuff like Rednecks Kiss the Best is the name of one of the songs. I know I shouldn't do this. I know this is the wrong thing. I know that this is all going to come crashing down, but God, that redneck kiss is the best, you know?
I mean, I love it already, and that's the first I've heard of it. That's great.
Good. Yeah, but Hedwig very much, I really want to do something along the lines of, I was amazing, now I'm broken and I'm getting back up, which is kind of that Hedwig story. And I need to find a way that it's just not a country version of Hedwig. So I'm working on sort of the performance of it at the moment.
That sounds like a really good idea, though. Like, take the sort of seed of the basic concept of what Hedwig's about and expand it in a different direction. Mm-hmm. I like that. Yeah. Very cool. I'm looking forward to that.
Me too. It's one of those things that's my worm in my head. It just, every once in a while, I'm like, oh, I have this idea. I'll disappear for the next 3 hours and I'll be back when I'm done.
That's me with these shows. But here today as well, we are, of course, going to talk about the deleted scene here. It doesn't have a name. The deleted scenes don't have names, annoyingly, on the Blu-ray or the DVD. I've got all the different versions. But this one here, we begin our clip with Yitzhak outside of the motel, preparing and practicing for his role in Rent. And I guess if this was still in the movie, we still sort of wouldn't know if this is for the audition after he's picked up the advertisement, or if it's actually like he's got the part now and it's rehearsals, just like solo rehearsals, you know. Yeah. I'm getting the vibe it's the former, though. Like, maybe I want to get this down for the audition.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I mean, I think it was supposed to be on a cruise ship, right?
Like, yeah.
The show was going to be on a cruise ship. So
going around Polynesia.
Practically, it seems like, you know, Yitzhak wouldn't have had a chance to learn the choreography yet and be rehearsing it and that kind of thing. But when I first saw this scene, you sent it to me, immediately what popped into my mind was, this is for Rent. This is not for Hedwig. Look at the excitement and look at the movement and look at the, you know, the energy being put into this. And Yitzhak is not known for energy.
No.
Like Yitzhak will hit the note and then feel bad about it. But this looked like something else. And so I do think that this is for Rent, of course.
And I don't think Yitzhak is allowed energy.
Yeah.
But you know, you stand there and you sing what I tell you to sing and that's it. Don't do anything else.
Right. Yeah. Yitzhak.
So this is finally like a bit of freedom, you know, but doing what he wants to do. Mm-hmm. And oh God, the noises he's making, right? I do this if I'm listening to music while I'm like doing chores and I've got headphones on. I think everybody does. You can't stop yourself, can you? You just start making weird sounds around the house.
You know, having been a singer now for about 8 years, I do stop myself because I know that if I can't hear myself, it's not going to sound right.
You've got the training to do that.
Yeah, but I absolutely did. My favorite thing to do when I was a kid was, you know, tune out my family on a car trip and put on my headphones, my Walkman. If you remember what a Walkman is.
And, oh, God, yeah, sadly.
Of course, the batteries were always dead, and my Tiffany album sounded like Barry White, but whatever. I would sing along, and I am sure that it drove them insane, but they never actually said anything about it, so that's good.
That's a nice thing. See, I did, and my parents did say something about it, and then it made me kind of feel a bit awkward for years.
Yeah.
So parents, if you're listening, don't give your kids weird traumas.
Yeah, let them enjoy what they enjoy.
Yeah, exactly. Make stupid sounds. Sing along. You think in your head, oh, I'm kind of whispering. I'm singing along quietly. No, you're not. You never are.
Right. You never are because you have to be allowed to hear yourself through the headphones.
Yeah. It's a bit like podcasting. I've got my headphones on. I'm sure if someone was in the room with me, they'd be like, stop shouting, please. And
you don't sound like you're shouting.
It's all an illusion. Hmm. But there's no question, if you know Rent, what role he's going for here. Now, if you've seen it, it's Angel. All of these moves are Angel, which I'm sure you've probably seen up to that bit, the introduction of the character, right?
Yeah.
Because that's quite early on. And these are all the moves Angel's doing in that song, Today for Me, Tomorrow for You, which is an interesting choice, actually, because it's sort of the earlier deleted scene we've talked about here is when you get Yitzhak's background, whereas Yitzhak in the story was a drag queen, mm-hmm. and now Hedwig won't let him be a drag queen because it takes the shine off Hedwig, basically. Right. So it's interesting then that this character, he really wants to get back to that kind of thing because Angel is, I mean, they say trans, but I think the way Angel's described in the movie version, at least, I can't remember on the stage show, I'd say probably these days you'd say non-binary.
Sure.
So it's quite interesting to see Yitzhak like yearning for this. Like that's part of their exploration, not just getting away from Hedwig.
Sure. And I think I think having written it that way likely has a lot to do with John Cameron Mitchell having been in Rent and probably really connecting with that character in some way. But also just the idea that Yitzhak is almost always played by a woman dressed as a man who wants to be a drag queen.
I think that's so fascinating.
Yeah. And so it just kind of wrapping your mind around, okay, so the Yitzhak character is a man who wants to be a drag queen, but it's played by a woman. So what does that mean? Like, what are you trying to tell us?
I think the first time I saw Hedwig, that was one of the exciting bits to me because obviously, you know, you've got John playing Hedwig. You're like, okay, I know what a drag queen is. I know what trans people are. I know what... I suppose gender fluid, but I didn't know the term back then.
Sure.
But it's like, okay, I get these concepts, but I'd never seen a woman play a man who wants to be a woman. That was like a whole new thing to me, and it helped me understand these different kind of things.
I wonder if that was the inspiration for that movie, Connie and Carla.
Oh, that's interesting, actually. Yeah.
There's a little bit of Victor Victoria going in there, Connie and Carla. Like, I think... It's funny how, you know, right now in America, there's this talk coming from the far right about how drag queens are indoctrinating children and, you know, everything is sexualized.
We've got it here as well, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, propaganda spreads on social media like cancer. Mm. But When you look back at it, drag has been around for a very long time. Like Some Like It Hot was in the 50s, wasn't it? And there was
Yeah,
two
yeah.
drag queens in that. So drag isn't what's scaring them. It's just one of those hot button things that is just going to be used to rile up the base for a while, and then they'll move on.
Oh yeah, they'll pick something else. They always do. The thing that I never understood about people getting angry about this kind of thing is, like on British TV at least, drag has always been a thing.
Oh
There's
yeah,
always been
Monty
people in drag.
Python,
Yeah,
right?
exactly, right there. And I mean, one of the biggest entertainers when I was young was called well, he's Paul O'Grady, but his
Oh,
drag
okay.
name's Lily Savage.
Yeah.
All over TV, and like my mum and dad would watch his show or her show, depending which one you're watching. And they thought it was hilarious. They loved this comedian, Julian Clary, who's like very gender fluid, all makeup on and stuff. Loved him. But as soon as I would put makeup on, it was like, oh, no, we don't like that. It's like, hang on a minute.
Yeah.
You like all these characters. What's going on here?
It's really interesting how people respond. When I first started getting into when I first did it the first time for the event, for the party, it wasn't anything. It was like, oh, I was invited to be this. Sure, I'll do it. Drag for me isn't a gender expression, except my character in drag, I like to think of her as a combination of all of my mom's friends from when I was a kid.
Oh, that's great.
And when I did it the first time, it wasn't about being a woman or acting like a woman at all. Like I didn't really change my mannerisms much. And I have this deep voice, so it's hard to cover that up. But once I started getting into it for real, and I would come downstairs in the afternoon with my face poorly painted, and I was trying on new boobs and I was trying on new hips, my husband had this look on his face like, what the hell is going on? And I think for a while, he and a lot of my friends and kind of everybody who saw me before I had a viable product thought that it might be some sort of gender exploration. And I could see the discomfort. We'd gone to drag shows and we'd been to Hedwig and we'd done all these things, but for whatever reason, they seemed uncomfortable with it, with me. And now I think they understand that for me, it's Anya is one of my characters. She's somebody that I love, but she is like a filtered version or more of an unfiltered version of me. And she just happens to look like this giant woman. She's like 7.5 feet tall.
Well, that's the thing. It's there's different types of drag. Everyone's got their own reasons for it. There's a billion different reasons.
I work with a lot of performers who got to drag because they are exploring their gender, and they just are great performers and they're good at it, and it doesn't necessarily even need to be gender exploration to do drag,
No,
but
no.
that just is sort of the mold that they fit, so they perform that way. I don't have any opinion on how you get there. It's just what you do with it that matters.
Exactly. That's wise advice in general.
Exactly.
And back in the scene here, we've got the rest of the band sort of peeking out the window at Yitzhak, trying to have a sneaky little look at what he's doing. So, I mean, this says to me instantly, oh, Yitzhak has not told any of them what's going on. Not one of them. Because they're all looking so confused, like, what the hell is this?
Well, and then when Phyllis walks out the door, all of a sudden, the shades close. I'm trying to figure out why, because obviously just closing the shades made it more obvious that they were watching in the first place. But I like, was Phyllis going to go out? Were they expecting Phyllis to yell at Yitzhak about this or what? Like, did they
Oh,
think,
that's
oh,
a good
hell, we
point,
can break
actually. Yeah,
loose?
maybe they think Hedwig has sent her out. Like, go and get him to stop whatever this is, So maybe like, oh, no, let's hide. Because I'm assuming that's Hedwig in the left window.
I think so. It looks to me like this scene takes place right before Yitzhak comes in and tries to leave, and Hedwig rips up his passport. Because the looks on Phyllis's face, it was less about, oh, I'm threatened by you wanting to leave this band, and more about, I see you wanting to be more than you are. And of course, Phyllis has heard the story about Kristallnacht and you never wear a wig again. And so Phyllis also, is abused by Hedwig. I think Phyllis, the look on Phyllis's face was like, oh, wow, like, look at you growing. Look at you being something more. I'm excited by this. Look at this. Like, it was an amazed look more than it was a negative look.
It's such a cool sort of combination. It's fantastic acting, you know, that combo of like what is happening along with like admiration. Almost
yeah,
like, oh my God,
so.
this is beautiful. Maybe Phyllis wants that. Like, oh, I wish I could be free.
Maybe Phyllis wants to represent Yitzhak.
Oh, that actually might be a good idea at this point, let's be honest, because
yeah.
We know what's to come if it's where right. We think it is in the film.
Yeah, and it seems like it makes sense to me that immediately after that, after seeing Yitzhak show this drive and this ambition, to see how Hedwig treats Yitzhak, I think probably just snapped Phyllis out of it and was like, okay, I don't think I want to work with you anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think you need me anymore is what the line was.
I'm loving this idea that she now represents Yitzhak. That's such a cool, oh, I didn't even think of that.
Maybe that's why Phyllis never shows up to Hedwig's shows. Are
yeah.
you in the back, Phyllis, in the back row?
We've uncovered the truth. And it's an interesting choice of wig that Yitzhak has here as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because Phyllis finds the wig and the flyer. And this does not look like a wig that Angel wears, you know, unless the production's wildly mixing it up. So I'm thinking Yitzhak has just sort of, for practice purposes, maybe taken one of Hedwig's.
Yeah, well, they're probably the only wigs he has access to.
Yeah, because it's not like he could say, I'm just going down to buy a wig at the store.
Hedwig, yeah.
But, no, you're not.
I'll hide it in my pocket when you're not looking.
Yeah, because we did see him sort of very lovingly fondling the wig at the start of the film.
Right.
Like he was longing for it.
Right.
So I'm assuming, yes, I've taken one of Hedwig's. I'm just going to, it's a wig to practice with. You know, it's something.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I'm on board.
I mean, because my thinking is, you know, there's a lot of dancing involved for this particular song that Yitzhak's doing. I think you need to practice with a wig on, because if you're not used to it, not only are you going to boil to death, that thing's going to fly everywhere.
Yeah, I can say for a fact, having had some pretty complicated costumes that, and complicated, you know, songs and choreo, that if you haven't practiced in your costume or at least in your infrastructure, then you're going to be surprised when the actual performance comes. Singing in a corset is way harder than you think it's going to be.
Oh my God!
You know, and if you're singing a big, lively song and dancing around, you need to make sure you know when to take a breath.
I didn't even think of that. Yeah. Oh, crap. Yeah. Your breathing's going to be very compromised.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's funny. I do a lot of stand-up comedy in my one-woman shows. And so I mostly work from home. My husband works from home. Since COVID, neither one of us really have anywhere to go anymore. Mm-hmm. And I do this full-time now. So I will spend 4 or 5 hours a day upstairs in my little studio room with my headphones on, talking at myself in a microphone and laughing at myself and jumping around when I'm singing songs and like trying to go through choreo. And I can only imagine what he thinks when he walks by. I'm sure it seems crazy from the outside, but you've got to do these things or you're not ready when the time comes.
Yeah, yeah. If you're not really going the whole hog, so to speak, you're not really practicing.
Right. Yeah.
It's like, well, it always makes me laugh, for instance, to bring up the, dare I bring it up, Drag Race. Whenever you see them, they're practicing the routines for whatever they've got to do. And, you know, they're just in their, let's call them boy clothes. I hate that phrase.
Street clothes.
That's a better term. I like that. And are we to believe that that's the only practicing they're having? Because I don't buy that for 1 second.
You know, they do allude to it sometimes. Oh, I was practicing this all night in my hotel room. You know, you do get that sometimes. I took this wig home with me. I rhinestoned this all night long. But yeah, they generally tried to pan it off as in, like, this was actually a whole week and you only had one day to do this thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And we know that's not true. Any of us who actually have done any of those things know that's not true.
Because they always seem remarkably good overnight, don't they, on the show? It's like, oh, they're all terrible. And then when the time comes, oh, they're all perfect.
Yeah. You know, and it's interesting. I've been to some auditions where I thought I was going to walk in and I would be hot stuff. And it was kind of that Dunning-Kruger effect where I didn't know how much I didn't know. Mm. And I walked in and I thought I was going to do great. And then I saw these other performers picking up choreo, like complicated choreo in 5 minutes.
Ooh.
And I don't even know what the steps were called. So I do think that people can be really good at it and pick those things up quickly, but I think a lot of people need more rehearsal than just one day.
Yeah, I think that sounds like if you've got that, oh, you've got like a special talent there.
Oh, sure. Yeah. It's a skill just like anything else. You work at it.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. And as I alluded to here as well, Phyllis finds the advertisement for the show. Mm-hmm. So she at least figures out what's going on. Mm-hmm. But do you think if the next bit isn't the passport situation, do you think she would tell anyone? Because I think earlier in the movie she might tell Hedwig, but at this point I don't think she'd even tell the rest of the band. I think it's like,
no,
this
I
is
agree.
Almost like
and
our secret.
I think that might be part of why she played it facial. The facial expression she did is to show, wow, I'm on board with this. You know, like I'm surprised, but I'm also proud in a way. I don't think, especially at this point in the at that point in the movie, I don't think she would have told anybody. I think that she knew that Hedwig wasn't for her. She knew that it was sort of a losing proposition until Hedwig got their shit figured out.
Yeah.
And I think that she was just excited for Yitzhak.
That's the cute bit, I think. The you can see it. She's trying not to be too excited, but you can see it behind her eyes. Oh, great acting.
Yeah, no, I watched it a few times, trying to come up with a different interpretation of it. And that's just, I think, what it is. That's who I think she is.
And I mean, I don't really see why you'd cut it from the movie, to be honest. Maybe it's just for time. You know, you've got to make little cuts here and there. But I really like this scene because you get Yitzhak then being super embarrassed, grabs the wig and the flyer, runs away. That's kind of cute too. It's a nice character moment.
Yeah, I agree. I think it adds a lot. If it goes in the movie where I think it does, I think it really adds a lot to that situation. And it explains Phyllis's reaction the way she does, at least a little bit better. But again, you know, it's like a minute. And when you're talking about a movie, a minute is a long time.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a long time, but when you've got to make all these little edits and things, it quickly builds up into, oh, we've shaved 15 minutes out of the film.
Yeah, we don't want another Titanic that's like 3 hours long.
Now, I mean, I'm biased, so I do want a 3 hour long.
I do. I was thinking that too. I'm like, actually, I want a 3 hour version of Hedwig.
The only deleted scenes I sort of would have kept out of the movie. Which they did do, was the sort of the first one and the recurring bit with Phyllis and the phone in a tooth. Have you seen those?
No.
So it's funny, but I wouldn't keep it in. So Phyllis, there's loads of scenes, well, not loads, there's like two or three, where she's got a cell phone implanted in her head and tooth. And it's so she can do business deals all the time, no matter where she is. And there's like a joke bit where she gets hit in the head and the phone's off the hook, and to hang up she has to like tap her tongue on her tooth like and it's not working because it's damaged the phone, so it's just like going like boo boo boo, you know, all the time.
Oh no, like
yeah, and she has to get someone like get the manual out and try and fix it's funny, but it's slightly too over the top, I think.
Yeah, that seems like somebody's idea after smoking a joint and being like, this would be hilarious. And then they go back and watch it and they're like, I'm not really sure this adds to the story.
It's a lot of fun. Like, go and seek it out. But yeah, I wouldn't put it in. But every other, you know, like the whole Kristallnacht thing, I really want that to be in the movie. Mm-hmm. It tells you so much about Yitzhak. And you get stuff like that on the stage show. You hear these snippets about Yitzhak. But you don't get that in the finished movie is my only real, I wish, you know.
I do wish that they had stuck a little closer to the reason that Hedwig behaved towards Yitzhak the way they do, because that just didn't seem to be well fleshed out in the movie. And I had already seen the stage show at that point, so I got it. Yeah. But I do agree, yeah.
Yeah, it is a shame. But, you know, again, you've got to abide by... It's probably the studio. Like, your movie's got to be this long. Don't make it any longer. Oh, crap.
Billy Joel has a famous line in one of his songs. The song is called The Entertainer. And he's talking about, it was a beautiful song, but it ran too long. If you want to have a hit, you got to make it fit. So they cut it down to 3:05.
There you go. I mean, that says it all right there.
Yeah.
And I do actually usually put sort of famous songs at the end of the episode. So I think I might put that at the end now.
Oh, yeah. It's a great song. The Entertainer.
I'll find a fun cover of it that I can, you know, hit someone up and get their permission to use rather than the original.
Yeah, that's probably smart.
It's worked so far. Let's see.
I think it's probably 40 years old, so maybe in another 30 it'll be out of copyright.
Okay, so I'll keep this episode on ice for 30 years.
Right, just in case.
Just in case, you know. But that is the scene. So is there anything else you'd like to say about Hedwig in general or about musicals?
So Hedwig in particular, I think I'm going on, I think it's been like almost 9 or 10 years since it was in 2014. So it's almost 9 years. And I haven't lost my love for it. You know, it was on repeat constantly for the first few months, and then it just sort of got a little less over time. I've delved into it. I've case studied it. I've character studied Hedwig. I've tried to look at it from every imaginative angle. Why are they trying to tell us this? What is this trying to say? Does it mean something I haven't realized yet? And it's just one of those, there's so many levels and there's just so much to offer in what seems like something that's so simple. Really is, in my mind, it's one of the masterpieces of the last, 30 years. And people, I've never seen anybody see Hedwig that didn't enjoy it.
That's the thing. Yeah. I can show it to people who they think, oh, I'm not going to like this. I don't like musicals. I'm not queer. But no, it's got something for everybody. And I think there's a message for everybody in there.
Absolutely. Yeah. Whether you are in that situation or not, there's so many little messages along the way. There's so many little situations along the way that I think everybody can get something out of it.
Definitely. It'll take you on an exploration of personal growth in lots of different ways. It doesn't have to be the way Hedwig's doing it.
Yeah, it turned me from a 35-year-old man into a 45-year-old woman.
So. If that isn't a great advertisement for it, I don't know what is. That actually was because I love punk music and the band The Damned. Mm-hmm. I remember there's an advert for their first album back in 1976. And that was what it said, actually, which at the time was shocking to people. That there's a bass player for a different band called The Advert holding The Damned's album. And she's called Gay Advert. And it says, Gay says, The Damned album will turn men into girls. Buy it now. That's a great way of trying to sell something to people. They'll be like, oh, my God.
What? And even if they don't buy it, they'll remember it.
Yeah, exactly. I want to see that now on a Hedwig post.
I mean, it's happened at least once. Not literally, of course, but it has absolutely led me down this path. And I'm so happy to be here. Like, my life now, doing what I do and trying to find a way to connect with an audience and just exploring all of this later in my life, I learned a lot of things in my career. And they've made me sort of outsized successful in Anya, because I know how to get things done in a way that younger people generally don't. But it has changed my outlook on everything. That and Hedwig was the spark. So I will always be in debt.
Oh, it's nice to have a kindred spirit there then. Yeah, exactly the same for me. Because Hedwig opened up all kinds of worlds to me, and especially later in life, weirdly, because I've been watching this pretty much since the movie came out. And as listeners of the show know, I famously watched it every day for a month once. I know, it was a very weird month, that. And for some reason, as I got older, I connected with it more and more and more. Maybe because part of it is about Hedwig aging.
And not only that, but you probably had experiences which made you realize that you have the reference, and now you experience it in a different way.
Yes, because when I first saw it, I'll be honest, I just thought, oh, cool. It's like badass music and like crazy costumes. It's over the top. And that's all I thought. Oh, that was fun. But then as you age, as you watch it more and more, you connect to the themes. It speaks to you, And you really delve into it and you look for the hidden meaning. Well, actually, when you said you've explored it, have you come up with any strange theories or new theories that you think anyway?
Well, I think my biggest one was that Tommy and Hedwig are the same person.
Are you firmly on that fence, or you just think it's a possibility?
I think it might have been the initial intent. I did see an interview with John Cameron Mitchell where he was asked, if some people think this and some people think that maybe Tommy was a figment of Hedwig's imagination, maybe bipolar disorder or something. And why did you choose to hire an actor to play Tommy and not do it yourself in the movie? And John's answer was, because I wanted to kiss a cute boy on camera. And so I don't know if that answers the question. You know, I think that still leaves it wide open for interpretation.
No, I think that's what an answer, because, yeah, you can read that any way you want.
Yeah, it's not an answer. It's just a joke. And so that's my favorite theory. And, you know, I've always wanted to check out sunny Yugoslavia. So hopefully someday I'll be able to go there and check that out. But, you know, I'm a child of boomers, and I am a grandchild of World War II vets. And I grew up in the Cold War. And so I know some of the history and like some of the helplessness that Hedwig as a character was talking about, even though I was not in East Berlin.
Yeah, but I imagine it was still, you know, felt the world over in various ways.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think the only thing that I think is a little different that I see it now is I've worked with so many trans performers in the past 4 years. And I know a lot of them are a little upset at the way that concept is handled in the show. You know, Hedwig isn't trans in my mind. Hedwig was pushed into a sex change.
Yeah.
And now is presenting as, you know, this gender that's somewhere in the middle. And so I tend to look at it that way, but I know trans performers who are kind of upset about the way that the trans aspect of the story is handled.
Yeah, I can see why you might feel that way. Yeah.
Yeah, I can see it too. That's that empathy skill. but I have to defend it, you know, and Rocky Horror is kind of the same way, especially the song Sweet Transvestite. I know people have problems with that. But I look at it as a comment on the time. I look at it as a piece of art from when it was created. And I look at it as part of the journey to get us to where we are now. And to have the conversations we're having now couldn't have happened without having these steps along the way. So I'm, you know, I do have a problem with it in some ways. I can see the concern, but I also see the value. And that's what I've been getting out of Hedwig lately, is just the value of understanding that everybody has had a different situation. Even if you know a little bit about their situation and you kind of relate to it, it's different. And it's not up to me to tell somebody that they're wrong for feeling this way about something that I love.
Exactly. Exactly. There's nothing wrong with seeing the flaws in something you love. Mm-hmm. That actually, in a way, can make you reevaluate and appreciate it in other ways or new ways, you know.
I think so, yeah.
In fact, you know, I criticize my favorite movies all the time. All the time. There's stuff in Hedwig I've made fun of throughout the course of this podcast, and that's great.
Absolutely. Well, and I think Hedwig is such a great example of they kind of want you to make fun of it anyway.
Yes.
That's one of the things that I love is, yes, it's hard-hitting subjects and it's serious, but also it's clearly it's a dark comedy, and you're clearly meant to be uncomfortable and like question it and you know, not like some things about it. That's the point.
Absolutely. Yep. And that is basically how some people have reacted to it, and I've shown them. They've been like, they've clearly, visibly been sort of like, you know, shuffling in their seat, and they weren't sure how to take it, especially when Angry Inch comes on.
Yeah.
But again, that makes you think. It's going to stay in your brain. You're going to sit down and consider it later on and maybe come back to it, hopefully.
Great art is art that goes with you and isn't just given to you. You know, you have to take it with you.
Yes, yes. And you can put your own sort of experiences on it and draw different things from it as well. It's both ways. You sort of give to the art as much as you take from it in a bizarre way.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I don't have an angry inch, but whenever I sing that song, I am angry by the end of it.
Yes.
And that's what makes it a great song. Is it just telling this story makes me angry. And that's why this song is what it is, you know.
We need more anger in the world now.
Like, it's my anger out, that's for sure.
That's the thing, yeah. It's a good way to expel it in a non-harmful fashion, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But do you have any further notes before I wrap up then?
I don't think so. I mean, I know that we're all the way halfway across the world from each other, but I'm super happy that you discovered me and that you like what I do. And I'm very happy to be here and talk about this with you. I love what you're doing. I think Hedwig is, like I said, it's one of the great pieces of art from the last 30 years. It's changed my life. So I'm so happy that you had me here today.
Thank you.
Yeah, follow me. You know, if you're in the DC area or if you're on the East Coast, come and see one of my shows. And I'd love for more people to know about me and follow me on my journey.
Oh, yeah. Please do follow. And in fact, where can people find you? Is it just by your stage name, or have you got weird handles on your Insta and everything?
I do other characters as well, but they're not associated with Anya. I do the Grouch during December. I do a lot of charity drives and stuff dressed as the Grouch. And I do haunt acting and I do some stage acting as well. But Anya is really my job. So you can find me on Instagram at the word Dr.Anya with a J, Dr.Anya.Dick. Facebook, I'm just Anya Dick. And you can get to my website at AnyaDick.com.
Excellent. I did actually check out your website yesterday. I never normally check out people's websites, but I thought, there might be some interesting links and things on there.
Not yet. I just published it. So those are coming.
Well, I didn't want to say that on the mic, but
I know.
Yeah. But hey, it was very, very nice though, may I say. I want to steal
it. It's cute, isn't it? Yeah, it's really cute.
It's lovely. So check all of that out, everybody. And as usual, come and speak to me on Facebook at Hedwig's Wicked Little Town, on Twitter at Hedwig Pod. That's if we're all still on Twitter. You know, by the time you hear this, who knows what's going on with that. If you want me to make a Mastodon that everyone's moving to, let me know. I mean, I don't really know how the hell to use it, but let me know. And I'm on Instagram, also Hedwig Pod. And we'll be back again soon with another deleted scene. There's only one or two left, people. There's not many more left. And then we're going to struggle for more Hedwig content, but we're going to come up with something for you. We're going to come
you
up
can talk about
good.
The costumes and the wigs.
So, yes, we all head off in the van down the road to the next gig. See you soon, Headheads.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye.
And I know just where I stand. Another serenader and another long-haired man. Today I am your champion. I may have won your heart, but I know the game and you'll be getting my name. And I won't be here in another year if I don't stay on the charts. Oh, I'm the entertainer. I've had to pay my price for things I did not know at first. I learned by doing twice. Ah, but still they come to haunt me. Still they want their say. So I learned to dance with a hand in my pants. I let them rub my neck and I write them a check to me.